Hello, and welcome to Off the Shelf, Festival of Words. In this Ideas Alive episode, Dr. Stefania Vicari, Senior Lecturer in Digital Sociology, explores the role of social media in the lives of people coping with the awareness of having a genetic predisposition to cancer.
In 2013, Angelina Jolie used these words to close her New York Times op-ed.
I choose not to keep my story private because there are many women who do not know that they might be living under the shadow of cancer. It is my hope that they, too, will be able to get gene tested, and that if they have a high risk, that they, too, will know that they have strong options.
In the article, she went at length to explain her choice to undergo prophylactic mastectomy to prevent breast cancer, a cancer for which she knew she had a much higher risk than average, having tested positive for a so-called faulty gene. In her case, it was the BRCA1 gene mutation, which increased the risk of having ovarian, breast, and other types of cancer from a young age. Following the op-ed, the story was picked up by news, entertainment, and social media. Jolie's picture appeared on the covers of People and Time magazines, and the content of her op-ed remained of news value for months. Even in academic literature, you can now find mentions of the Angelina Jolie effect, to label the increase in demand and uptake of preventative gene testing for a BRCA mutation, or, as it is often called, the Angelina Jolie gene. But is this just a celebrity thing? Stephen Sutton was 15 when he was diagnosed with terminal colorectal cancer. His father, too, had had it, twice, both times recovering after treatment. Following his diagnosis, Stephen wrote a bucket list of things that he wanted to achieve before he died. For instance, he skydived and he played drums in front of 90,000 people at Wembley before the 2014 UEFA Champions League final. After news spread on social media, Stephen raised more than £3 million for Teenage Cancer Trust. Stephen, like Angelina, had a faulty gene, just a different one. Stephen's gene mutation is linked to Lynch syndrome, a genetic condition that increases the risk of colorectal and other types of cancer from a young age. My name is Stefania Vicari. I'm a senior lecturer in the Department of Sociological Studies. At Sheffield, my research focuses on digital media, health, and participation. In this podcast, I would like to talk about the way social media influence how we live, make sense, and cope with health conditions that are not very often spoken about. The interplay of science, lack of information, and people's fact. I would like to tell the story of family cancer syndromes, genetic predispositions to cancer passed on from parents to kids through so-called faulty genes. Like Angelina's, but also very much like Stephen's. According to Cancer Research UK, one in 400 people carry a BRCA faulty gene, and figures look similar for Lynch syndrome. However, those aware of it are in very small numbers, primarily because diagnosis requires genetic testing. In a recent interview, Claire Turnbull from the Institute of Cancer Research at the Royal Marsden NHS Foundation talked about the BRCA and Lynch syndrome genes as the big hitters, giving a very clear picture of the situation.
We are currently doing very, very poorly at finding the patients, the members of the population out there who have a pathogenic mutation in the big hitters genes. And one of the reasons that we are not very good at ascertaining these people is that, historically, we've done it through a clinical genetics model, and that is saying, oh, well, only do genetic testing in people who have a very, very strong family history of cancer.
So, at the moment, finding out about having a BRCA or Lynch syndrome mutation is a rare experience, and one that can be confusing and isolating, given that there is not much information out there. To the point that advocacy organizations like Lynch Syndrome UK highlight that one of the issues is that often GPs have never even heard of Lynch syndrome. Or, like I was recently told by Lynch Syndrome Ireland, that protocols of cancer prevention for individuals who have tested positive for a family cancer syndrome aren't yet streamlined. So, where do you find information if you have just found out that you have tested positive for a BRCA or Lynch syndrome mutation and your risk of having cancer is much higher than in the general population? A survey carried out in 2019, so pre-COVID, by the Pew Research Center shows that health content is among the top searches online. Their long-term research also shows that especially those living with chronic or rare diseases use online connections to supplement professional medical advice. So it is very much about finding information, but it is about building connections too. Ash Drummond, a BRCA peer-to-peer support volunteer for the Marie Keating Foundation, an Irish cancer charity, recently told me,
"I, like many, turned to social media to find my tribe in 2015, when in-person support groups and general information were scarce on the ground. I've watched as the space has grown over the last 6 or 7 years."
Ash is right. It is a space that has been growing for some time now. For instance, a BRCA conversation has been active on Twitter since before Angelina Jolie's 2013 opinion piece for the New York Times. BRCA and Lynch syndrome hashtags, groups and pages are now easily traceable in all mainstream social media like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter and TikTok. And it is not misleading to assume that they often end up being the first port of call for people who have recently found out of having a faulty gene. But what stories are most likely to become visible on social media? Which aspects of family cancer syndromes are most often shared on these platforms? Say, for instance, cancer prevention, like Jolie's prophylactic mastectomy, cancer treatment like immunotherapy, or maybe how to talk about any of this with siblings or children? Who gets to decide what disappears and what is brought to the spotlight? What is seen as reliable and by whom? What images, for instance, which body images, reach the widest publics? What questions get answered? And at the end of the day, how does this all influence someone's understanding of having a BRCA or Lynch syndrome mutation? Or of caring for someone who has it? As a matter of fact, we do have the answers to some of these questions. In the early 2000s, media and communication scholar Shani Orgad, for instance, studied breast cancer blogs and discussed how breast cancer patients engage with online spaces to construct and co-construct narratives that help them cope with their illness, to produce self-disclosure and achieve closure, as she puts it. Work by science and technology studies scholar Madeline Ackridge has shown how self-help discussion groups focused on health topics often mix personal narratives with scientific information, generating forms of knowledge that combine lay and professional elements, life stories and science. In my own research, I have mapped BRCA content on Twitter between 2013 and 2017, seeing once again how this mixing of lay and credentialed information is also very common in more open or public spaces, like Twitter threads and chats. With advocates like Lisa, Georgia, Tracy, Dahlia, Roberta, Pat, and many others, constantly broadcasting and curating content for their tribe. But what role does the way social media work play in all this? In 2018, Andrea Downing was leading a private Facebook group for women with a BRCA faulty gene. Privacy was an important element for the group, as members were concerned that their names might be exposed. They knew this could open them up to discrimination, for instance from insurers, or other privacy violations. Andrea became alarmed when she realized that a Chrome plugin called Grouply.io allowed anyone to download names, employers, locations, email addresses, and other personal details of all 9,000 people who had signed up for the group. Following Andrea's complaint, Facebook changed its setting. But then, how do privacy settings, the potential lack of transparency, and users' awareness or non-awareness of all this shape what personal narratives are shared and where, like in public hashtag streams, Facebook pages, or private groups like Andrea's? What impact does this have on other people accessing these narratives? In 2015, a group of women fought for their post-mastectomy selfies to be allowed on Facebook. They felt personally attacked by the platform's policy on nudity and obscene content, according to which their pictures had to be removed from the platform. The controversy prompted those involved to join forces and mobilize against the company. But then, how do automated moderation systems, like this one, shape the information and narratives related to cancer risk management presented on social media? Algorithms work backstage, making it difficult for users to even see how their content is curated by the platform and repurposed or made invisible to others. So how does the hidden work of algorithms influence information and connections that form around health conditions that, like family cancer syndromes, are rarely spoken of? What users and content become credentialed, relevant to recommendation, in a context where relevance is defined by the number of likes and mentions? The NHS has recently launched the Genomic Medicine Service, which aims to sequence 500,000 whole genomes by 2023-2024. This is just an example of the recent rollout of whole genome sequencing initiatives. These initiatives, and the increasing use of predictive genetics, will gradually identify more and more of us at risk because of a faulty gene. Will our everyday social media help us cope with it? Or will they make things worse?
Thank you for listening. For more information about the festival, please visit www.offtheshelf.org.uk. We'd love to hear your thoughts and responses on social media. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.